Good afternoon and welcome to the third annual Fundraising Success Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Joe Bolin, Managing Editor of Fundraising Success. I'm pleased to welcome you to another great session, our luncheon keynote, Staying Power, sponsored by ChemArt. Our presenter this afternoon is our 2012 Fundraising Professional of the Year, Sue Woodward, Vice President of Development at the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. Before we get started, let me point out a few tips on how to make the most of this presentation. First, if you have any technical difficulties and are viewing this webcast as part of the live day, please visit us in the information booth to get live help. If you're viewing on demand, please shoot us an email at virtualshowinfo@napco.com and someone will get back to you promptly. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. To know what the widgets on the console do, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below and learn how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from the console. Lastly, if you leave the session at any time or would like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the SFV on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning on Monday, October 15th. Now, without further ado, let's get to our luncheon keynote on multi-channel retention, staying power. Please welcome our presenter, Sue Woodward.
Thank you, Joe, and Fundraising Success. So I want you to sit back at your desk while I share with you some ideas on how you can make the most of your donor acquisition investment by keeping your donors engaged and hopefully provide a few ideas of channel integration that you can put to work immediately. First, I want to take a look at the fundraising landscape. The number of 501c3 organizations grew from 2002 to 2011 19%. Now, that's not including exempt religious institutions. Even though there was a drop of just over 200,000 from 2010 to 2011, another decline of 15%, this was a direct result of the enactment of the 2006 Pension Protection Act that required all nonprofits to file tax returns. But the end result is still the same. We are all fishing in an ever-shrinking pond. Giving by individuals, and that's the group we're going to focus on today, increased by an estimate 3.9% gifts from 2010. And bequest giving rose 12.2%. Now, that's not surprising as the donor population continues to age. Yet, for all the contained excitement around the growth we've seen over the past 2 years, it is the second slowest period of growth following a recession since 1971. And down from total individual giving that peaked in 2007 with a staggering $3.6 billion. And while we may be seeing a slight growth in dollars raised, services and costs associated with those continue to rise. So we also saw that individuals dropped from $229 billion to $217. So that's another 5.2% drop. All this to say that we are going to have to continue to work harder and smarter to acquire, engage, and retain our donor bases, so that we can deliver the services to those we help. Donors are not homogenous. So how do you develop a plan that engages all donors? What channels should you use? What should be a part of an integrated campaign? Well, there are three simple things that you can do immediately to retain the donors you have on your file. First one is to increase your communications. When I say that, I'm talking about telling your donors how their gift was used, the difference that they make, and why you continue to need their help. I mean, how many times have we all heard from donors through our call centers or in mail or email communications, "I never hear from you until I get another request for money." The next one is I suggest you stay timely. Tell why you're meeting an immediate need through your work and share stories of those who benefit. How no one does what you do. You know, money does follow mission. That's an old fundraising adage. And then finally, ask your donors why they give. This simple engagement tactic shows you want to ensure that you're doing a good job and that the people that support your organization are a top priority. Now, I know you'll be lucky if you get a 10% response, but at least you ask, and your donor is going to remember that. My team and I try to keep these three simple things in mind and in the forefront of everything we do, with all channels and with all of our donor segments. We've made a conscious effort to include stewardship pieces that talk about recent campaigns, the impact of donations received with periodic updates. This is no surprise to those of you who are major gift people in the audience. We stay up with the country and the regional news because we are an international organization and incorporate those topics into how they affect the children, families, and the elderly in Israel and the former Soviet Union, and stories of individuals, just so we bring it down to a personal level. We periodically ask donors why I give. In fact, this past February, we ran an online campaign, and that old adage about peer pressure making a difference worked, as we saw over 1,500 people respond and made it our third most effective year-to-date campaign behind Passover and Helping Hands. And we put together a video at the end and ran it on our homepage and garnered more gifts from people visiting the site. But how were we able to do all of these types of things effectively? Well, we did it through multiple channels. So now here's the $10 question. Are you waiting for your donors to provide that information as if one day they're going to wake up and say, oh, yes, you know, I need to tell my favorite charity my phone number, my email address, and even my cell phone number so they can stay in touch? To quote one of the best in our business, Roger Craver, if you haven't invested or created a budget for acquiring your donors' email addresses and phone numbers, it's time. And here's why. Because a recent study by Target Analytics found that for donors acquired online that give through multiple channels, and that's primarily direct mail, there is a direct correlation between higher retention and long-term value. It also showed that if online was the only channel made available, this group's retention rate and subsequent long-term value would be a fraction of what we see with a multi-channel donor. Data shows currently that direct mail is still the most effective method for being that multi-channel. The chart shows multi-channel donors that were acquired and give only online and those that were acquired online and give through multiple channels. The second graph in the chart shows donors acquired through mail only and their long-term value. That includes all giving. You can see that donors acquired through the mail continue to give through the channel, but there's little or not a lot of change. I would argue that this is the case because the majority of direct mail donors are older, and this is the channel that they feel the most comfortable with. But the donor demographic was not really looked at in this study. But if many organizations are like the ones I've worked for over the past several years, online donors are only skewing around 20 years younger. So let's say 50 to 55. They've taken on the philanthropy pattern of their parents and grandparents, but choose to give through a variety of channels, just like they shop, bank, and stay in touch with their children and grandchildren. And it can simply be that they're comfortable with multiple channels. You know, this is something the catalog mailers found out several years back, and it is even translating through catalogs with nonprofits. They send the catalog to drive people to the website. I mean, think about placing an order. You might call an 800 number, or you could go online, but what drove you there? The mail. And so the reverse. We use all types of channels to communicate. I doubt many of you still only read a newspaper, your mail, and watch the evening news. Those days are simply long gone. But I will tell you, I still get a newspaper, even though I find myself checking my news app on my iPhone for the latest information. I do watch the evening news. Somehow Brian Williams just doesn't look that great to me online. And while I watch TV, I'm doing something else. You got it. I'm looking at my iPad and searching around, and thus you now have what the 50-plus crowd is doing. So a note that we are seeing a sizable number of our lead generation constituents at IFCJ convert through the mail and on phone. For those of you with DRTV programs, I want to share with you that we're seeing many of our folks go online to make a gift after they see the program. Again, most likely because they're sitting there with other devices while they watch the TV. you don't really think that they're running to their computers to make the gift. No, they're looking at everything, and then they go on and make a gift. You know, we can use multi-channels to make our campaigns more personal, more timely, and more direct. But before you begin to create your program, you must get all your channels working together. You can't have direct mail sending out communications on one topic, e-appeals on another, your website looking cool and trendy on another, but not speaking about anything that is going on in your direct response communications. You have to break down those silos, and believe me, I know that's not easy. But if you can build a case, show the numbers, gain the buy-in, you're on your way to a successful fundraising year. And that now brings us to the segment I like to call, Are Your Online and Offline Efforts in Sync? Jeff Brooks, the author of, and I got to say this complete title, The Fundraiser's Guide to Irresistible Communications, Real-World Field-Tested Strategies for Raising More Money, lays it out beautifully. Most likely you'll see yourself somewhere in the following. You've been working in an environment something like this. The fundraising or development department is in charge of direct mail. The marketing department is in charge of the website. The two areas have absolutely nothing in common. This minimizes pain and conflict for our entire organization. Direct mail is old-fashioned, simplistic, and it stomps all over brand guidelines with gray gate tested abandoned. But it brings in money. So we leave it alone. The web is a different story. It's managed by the beliefs and opinions of the people who work in the organization. It is the showcase of the brand-compliant modern design that truly captures the essence of who we are and what we do. And as Jeff tells us, thus the great compromise. Direct mail and online have an external audience. And your website tends to be geared towards an internal audience of influential stakeholders. So what's the problem with this? It is costing you revenue. I'm going to say it again. It is costing you revenue. So let's say Lucy Dunner receives a direct mail piece and is moved, and she's so moved she goes online. She's looking all over for a simple call to action that's mentioned in her direct mail piece. She is ready to act. And what she reads in her direct mail is absolutely nowhere to be found. I give you the flip side of that. You spend thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars on lead generation programs using demand-side platforms, serving up one-on-one marketing, cutting-edge stuff. And then once you've gotten somebody to give up their name, not only do you put them into your online program, but more likely, you also send them some direct mail because you've been told interactive marketing will garner more frequent and higher gifts and keep a donor engaged. Yes and no. To break out of the great compromise, Jeff suggests some concrete steps you can do that won't be easy. But folks in your organization can console themselves once they start seeing the rising revenue. And then all will be well. So these steps include, with your integration alignment, placing the same calls to action, imagine that, in your mail, email, and online. Ensure that the same focus is placing those calls to action in all your channels. Use the same messaging. You know, I read once that sometimes we get too far away and write for a higher education level because that's what we expect online donors, maybe not so much for those offline donors, but definitely online donors to read. Well, actually, donors read at a comfortable level. And so a comfortable level is not necessarily a 7th grade level or a 12th grade level. It's an understandable level. So I would encourage you to look at all your communications. Also, you need to keep the same messaging and use the same look and feel, the same creative. Now, I can hear my friends that I've worked with for years online go, are you kidding me, Sue, the same creative? Ugh, it's going to look awful. And that, my friends, is the great compromise on both sides. It doesn't mean that making your website look like a piece of direct mail. That should continue to be interactive, and it needs to allow for social engagement, offer media options such as video, but it does have to ensure a similar focus and message. So now let's throw in outbound telemarketing. And remember, these folks might also have an email address, and a mail address, so your campaign messaging needs to stay the same. We've talked about the importance of aligning your channels with similar and same messages and talked about the harder part of bringing down the silos so that your integrated campaigns can be more successful. Now I want to just spend a few minutes on something that's very near and dear to my heart, and that's your data. And I probably should have started here, but it isn't very sexy, and I wanted to try and at least keep your interest for a little while. Here is a simple fact. Your data is your money. That starts with a good database, with protocols for updating, and that your staff is fully trained to use your systems and processes. Development is data-driven. Otherwise, why would we carefully craft ask strings for increased and continued giving? Why would we know what marketing message perform at the best time of year, or know something as simple as a long email performs better than a short one? Because we test through mass and personal marketing messages. Development's about relationships. Is your donor engaged? Does she take calls to action, from making a gift to signing a petition to answering a survey to sharing on Facebook or Twitter? Do you keep her updated on what you're doing, and does she know the impact she is helping to make? The best at this have to be the child sponsorship organizations such as Child Fund and World Vision. But don't kid yourself, it is labor intensive. But many of those donors have been with these organizations for years, and they support multiple children. Why? Because they're kept updated in a very personal way about how their money is being used and the impact it is having in the life of the child they're supporting. And that brings us to development is telling your story. An Israeli policeman was patrolling his usual neighborhood when he saw a figure down the alleyway. It was rummaging through garbage cans. It wasn't until he walked down the alley that he found that this was just a small boy, around 4 years old. And the child just looked emaciated as he hadn't eaten for days. He was naked and he could barely speak. He'd been abandoned by his parents and was fending for himself on the streets. The policeman immediately wrapped the boy in a blanket and took him to the nearest orphanage. Now, you see, in Israel, orphanages are not just for children with no parents. They're for children that have been abandoned or abused and need a safe place and somebody to care for them. This particular orphanage was a fellowship-funded orphanage. Our orphanages have a home-like environment. Campuses are divided into family units with up to 8 boys or girls being cared for by a married couple that provide a mother and father figure. They live in this large family environment, and they're loved and nurtured, and they eat healthy meals, and they get taken to school, and they just have this feeling of stability. And year before last, I was fortunate enough to go to Israel and had a chance to see firsthand the projects and the people we serve at the fellowship. And being there touched me more profoundly than I thought possible, particularly when I met an engaging 7-year-old named Chan. That was that same 4-year-old who was digging in the trash to survive, and I heard his story. I could not imagine, as a mother myself, abandoning my child and having them dig in garbage cans for scraps of food to simply survive. It just broke my heart. But then my heart was filled with joy because he was found and cared for and was growing into a loving and well-adjusted child. Now, I could have just given you the facts, those being over 800,000 children live below the poverty line like Chan. Chan was 4 years old when he was found on the streets and taken to a fellowship-funded orphanage. There he gets 3 meals a day, a stable environment, and he's happy and healthy. But then I wouldn't have been telling you Chan's full story or the impact that it had on me. So what I'm trying to share with you is that in order to retain your donors, you have to engage them. You have to tell them personal stories and ask for their help to provide a loving and caring and safe environment. I'll leave the part out about how quickly you get into the story, where you tell the reader what you want them to do. That is the science part, depending on the channel that you're using. I just wanted to share with you how stories engage. You have to touch the heart and engage the mind. It's the story of a child digging in a trash can, not that over 800,000 children live below the poverty line. Your donor is going to see that she can help that one child trying to overcome 800,000 children living below the poverty line. It's almost an impossibility for one individual. So now let's get back to those channels. And what I want to share with you is more is better. So you need to start with a good base, donor base, and protocols. You need to engage all your channels. You need to send similar or same messages so there's no confusion in the mind of your donor. And then you need to tell personal stories. And finally, test, test, test. And these should go through all channels. Your integrated campaign should fit into your donor's world. Because believe me, your donor is much more important to you than you are to them. You need to make your message relevant and tell stories, not statistics. And then you don't have to wait till you have the perfect plan. Quote my buddy Roger Craver, you need to follow the 75% rule. And that is that communications are 75% perfect and 100% on time. When you create a multi-channel campaign, you need to make sure that you understand the ROI of each channel and that you spend your time and energy on channels that have the greatest return on investment. And if you have good data, you're going to know that. So I want to share with you a real-life example, because this is what we did at the fellowship during our Passover campaign, that we found following these simple strategies was successful. We began with a kickoff meeting that we had all campaign participants that included our direct response teams, our marketing communications team, our church relations team, and our analytics team. For the direct mail, because we knew that direct mail pieces were not effective as, per se, a direct mail fundraising piece, we decided to put these into newsletters in our Journey magazine talking about Passover. Again, with a similar same message and look and feel as our other communications pieces. We also did a lot of online advertising. Now, we did this on our own website as well as banner ads on external sites to drive donations, and then keywords, increasing our keywords around Passover time for search engine marketing. We also invested and ensured that we had all our online assets in place. We were talking about the same thing during the four-week campaign. Our weekly e-newsletter focused on stories of the impact of donations, particularly during the time of Passover. I failed to mention this campaign was called Fill the Pantry, so obviously it was a feeding campaign. We ensured that each on our homepage each week there were updated fundraising stories. We ensured we had new project pages that people could go to and read about the projects that they were helping to fund. And in the rabbi's commentary, he talks about the need for this program, but also the impact, particularly on destitute Jewish people during Passover and the special foods needed to celebrate those holidays. We launched our online fundraising efforts with a series of four weekly e-appeals, and at the end sent a stewardship email. Also at the end, wrapped up the following month, it was also included in what we call our Shoresh, which is our hard copy newsletter. The other thing I will share with you, that we don't just send out an e-appeal. We always do a resend every week and raise as much on the resend as we do on the original send. And a lot of that is the old adage of somebody having to see something seven times before they remember it. So we continue, and I guess others have also found this to be effective as we continue to see duplicate emails sent throughout the industry. We also ran on local and national TV channels across the country, as we do have a very robust DRTV program with our 30-minute infomercial on food boxes and feeding, a two-minute spot that ran on national news channels, and also a one-minute spot. Now, we'll share with you that the two-minute spot was more effective because it had a chance to tell the story. Unlike the one-minute spot, it did not perform as well. And then we had a web-based slideshow. Now, with our spots also, we take those and a lot of times use them on our lead generation campaigns, and in this case we did. We took the one-minute spot, and it performed very well for bringing new constituents, not necessarily donors, but new names and new constituents to the file, which we then converted. And our outbound telemarketing, we had segments that included our current donors at 7-plus months and lapsed donors, and again, asked them to help us fill the pantry for destitute Jews living in Israel and the former Soviet Union. We then had mobile marketing. Now, as you can see, this is a little slightly aged campaign. We used QR code at the time. We don't do a lot of the QR code now, but it was effective at the time. People were still playing around with it, and they were enjoying it. We also created specific mobile web pages. Now, it's recommended that but pages become more mobile responsive. In the past year, we've seen more of a migration to that versus creating individual mobile web pages. But for this campaign, that's what we had done. We also made sure we looked at the low-hanging fruit, which was, our donate, giving opportunities for people to make matching gifts. We promoted it on our web page. And also on our thank you notification. So once somebody came and made a gift online with their thank you, we also invited them to go and check out this portion of the website to see if their company matched the gift. And we saw quite a number of matching gifts come through that way. Sometimes you just have to remind people. We also engaged our new media, Facebook. We made sure we had custom tabs with application donations. This is an interactive piece that allowed people to, keep people entertained. This was a causes page where they could drag and drop and fill the pantry. We also had campaign-specific posts on Twitter. We linked followers back to the website. And then also our options for people to go to Flickr and to see the actual campaign in stills where the feeding distribution centers that occurred, the people that came, the people that served, both in Israel and the former Soviet Union. So then our drum roll, as I say. We then saw, through this effort, we saw over 22,000 donors. 60% of those were renewal gifts at the time, because this campaign was run in March and April. 30% were ongoing donors. And 10% were newly converted. So you can see the gifts that were acquired, the average gift. This is because we're including mail in here, so it was lower for a $1.4 million. Now, there were also some major gifts that were running at the same time, but I did not include that in this multi-channel discussion, nor are they included in the actual gifts, because a lot of that is sponsoring soup kitchens and building of soup kitchens, and so even though it was happening during Passover time frame, it was going towards a specific targeted program. So finally, I just want to share with you, as you start on your journey to create a multi-channel program, I want to make sure that you don't let anybody tell you that you should let a donor rest. There's never been any evidence to support this theory, and it usually comes from non-fundraisers. The fact is that the more recently a donor has given to you, the more likely she is to give again. And finally, I encourage you to continue to educate yourself, just like you're doing today, by taking online seminars, reading books and periodicals, talking to colleagues, sharing information. You know, you owe it to yourself professionally, and more important, you owe it to those you serve. I want to thank you for allowing me to be a part of your day, and I hope that you gathered just a few pearls. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sue. We have a little bit of time left here. Would ask if you mind fielding a few questions.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, one of the things that we've really noticed here lately is people including monthly giving or planned giving as, especially in retention efforts. Is that something that your organization does or something that you've seen that's been effective here over your years?
Yes, we do make a concerted effort to, we have pledge programs that work through our DRTV programs, but those are for a finite amount of time. We have just moved into working more with monthly programs. I would say that right now we're up to about 10% of the file. Primarily most of those are online, but we are starting campaigns, Friends of the Fellowship, asking for ongoing and continued support because we know the need to have more monies that we can count on year after year after year, and we're not starting every year and reinventing the wheel. So, yes, as a part of the multi-channel efforts, we are focusing on particularly online, in the mail, and on the phones.
And I know you mentioned, you need to understand your ROI, and if you have good data, you can focus on the channels that are working best for you in multi-channel campaigns. But I know that some of our readers say it gets a little murky because let's say somebody gets a direct mail piece and they respond online or vice versa. How do you balance the numbers between the overall campaign of all the parts that were involved?
Well, I think you have to look at your overall results as well. Unless you're driving somebody to a specific targeted page, you're not really going to know exactly what marketing message is affecting what, but you know for a campaign and you look at increased results. If mail is your number one driver, it's probably going to continue to be your number one driver. For us, it's not. For us, it's DRTV for acquisition, and mail comes second. But what we have seen is we have seen people because, again, it goes back to what I was saying about making something available on your website for that donor that just received a piece of mail or watched a DRTV program, that there is something on our homepage that people can immediately go and see and know. And so we're seeing them, when they've gotten that piece, go to online and are looking for that call to action. And because we've integrated it and made sure it's in both places, now I'm not saying people don't just go to your website and do a call to action because they, you know, it's a call to action. But it's a much more effective methodology. You're never going to get an exact number. But we know that if we do that, or we've seen through our testing and through our results, that as long as we keep similar same messages, we have similar calls to action, that we have increased our overall level of giving and have seen our donors stay on the file longer.
And I know you mentioned, you know, one of the keys is to break down the silos and make sure that all the messages are on the right message, the right program here. How do you get, you know, buy-in across the board to make sure that your organization is running, you know, these multi-channel campaigns smoothly?
Well, I don't want everybody to get the impression that we live in utopia here. We don't. we've been able to break down the silos for certain times of the year for certain campaigns. There's still an ongoing need to gain an understanding, and that's through your senior team. I mean, it's got to start from the top and go down. You can't from the bottom and go up. That we need to work together. So it's a lot of personal communications within the organization, sitting down with the senior team, sharing the numbers, and even sometimes that doesn't work. But, you know, just building your case and continuing to get people to come on board and understand. It's not trying to take away, because the first thing that we always hear is, well, you know, the website's not just for fundraising, and I'm sure everybody out there has heard the same, but it can't be all things to all people. And at some point, you have to decide, is it 60% fundraising, 20% education, 20% engagement? How does it break down? And so once you have that answer, then the other pieces begin to fall into place. But it's a continuous discussion. It's never ending, especially when you get to the part about similar and same creative. You can't take print creative and make it look good online any more than sometimes online creative doesn't look good in print. But you have to have some elements.
And then with the shifts in kind of donor behavior over the years, especially, you know, with more channels coming involved and donors wanting to be kind of more involved with organizations, how has that affected retention efforts? Has it made it more difficult to retain donors, you know, easier, or, you know, have you seen no difference?
You mean with the increase in organizations?
Just with the increase in channels that are going on and the way that donors, yeah.
No, actually, you know, you want to make it as easy for somebody to give as you possibly can. If they want to write a check, they should be able to write a check. If they want to pick up the phone, they should be able to pick up the phone. If they want to go online, they should be able to go online. I've actually found through a number of organizations I've worked with probably since, well, we started some online in 1996, so I won't go back that far, but particularly after 9/11, you began to see that people wanted to make immediate response and meet an immediate need. And so making channels available and easily accessible has, if anything, I think for our industry, made things better. And again, as I said, you know, people consume media differently now than they did. They don't just read a newspaper, watch TV. They are looking at their phones, they're looking at their tablets, they're looking at their computers, they may have the TV running in the background. You know, it's just, it's just a different way we live today than 20, 30 years ago. And so you have to, in order to be on top of that, you have to be accessible through the same kinds of channels.
And then how important is it for organizations to, while retaining donors is clearly, you know, you get the most value out of them, you know, the longer people are on your file, but how important is it to balance acquisition with that as well to make sure you can sustain for the long haul?
Well, acquisition in the mail has been tested so many years, and there are many more experts in that field than myself. And acquisition online. I would argue that you have to keep your acquisition investment up, but not to the point of a churn and burn. You need to get quality donors that you can, or quality constituents or donors that you can convert. We are investing heavily, I'm just going to tell you personally here at the fellowship, with our lead generation programs. We have seen a tremendous success in bringing new names to the file. And those names are not all converted through the mail. Around 30% of those names, because these are people that have actually held up their hand. These are not lists we've purchased or anything like that. They've held up their hand and said, yes, I want to know more about you. I want to be a part of this. And we've converted that 30% through the mail. So there's your multi-channel right there. They came in through an ad or something they saw online. And a lot of it, we do one-on-one marketing. You're going to see a lot of the, I've already noticed a lot of the child sponsorship organizations are doing that now. You know, that started with the Obama campaign a few years ago, and now nonprofits are able to take advantage of that. So if I'm interested in something, those ads are going to be served up to me. Now, am I going to convert online? Probably, because that's what my comfort level is, but it might not be somebody else's. So you can't stop investing in acquisition, but you should test different types of acquisition and then see where you're getting the bang for your buck. You know, just doing more does not necessarily mean that you're doing better. And then you need to look at the long-term value. How long do these people stay on your file, where you've invested? And online, it's a little more difficult than the mail because we don't have as much data. But we're getting there, and we should know more in a few years.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sue. We're just about out of time here. So on behalf of Fundraising Success Magazine and ChemArt, I would like to thank you again for viewing the session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the networking lounge to chat live with other session attendees. You can also visit the info booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. And please also check out the agenda for the rest of the day today. We have several wonderful sessions lined up and encourage you to view as many as you can. Remember, if you can't watch them live, add them to your briefcase and view at your convenience in the on-demand environment. I'd like to thank Sue again for a wonderful keynote presentation here. And have a great day and enjoy. Thanks again.